Good morning. This is First Things, brought to you by Jackson's First Presbyterian Church. The minister of the First Presbyterian Church is Dr. Ligon Duncan. Stay tuned for First Things. Here with First Things is Dr. Ligon Duncan.
Thank you, Bill Wyman. This is Ligon Duncan, your host for First Things. We're delighted to have you with us listening today. Derek Thomas is not with us this morning, but I am glad to say that another dear friend is David Meredith. How are you, David?
I am doing well. You don't have a Welshman, but you have a Scotsman
I
today.
I do so have a Scotsman, and it is even better. It's the greatest of the Celtic fringe.
Absolutely.
I want to tell the listening audience about you, David. You are the pastor of the Smithton Culloden Church, where you've been since 1984.
I've been there for 21 years, Ligon. I know I don't look that
you
old.
You don't, yeah. It's hard for me to conceive that. I was just coming to Scotland in 1987, so right. I had missed you at the Free Church College by a few years, but knew of you from early on in my time there, and I guess I learned of you through mutual friends first. But you studied at the Free Church College, which, for those of you who've been to Edinburgh, is right downtown in the old town in Edinburgh, right on the mound, that beautiful, beautiful area right above Prince's Street Gardens. But you had studied English and politics at the University
That's
of Strathclyde.
Right. Yeah, in Glasgow, I did Chinese politics and I did American political systems.
Now, did you study modern China, or was it the whole history?
No, it was more. It was more at that time contemporary China, as it was influenced by Mao. So it's funny how things change.
Have
as
you
well,
kept
you know?
Up? With that? Is that something that's an interest?
Yeah, just through my general reading, I am interested, ironically, in both communist political systems, but they're more historical now, and American political systems.
Wow.
It fascinates me.
Have you talked much with Carl Truman?
I have, yes. Yeah. Carl and I would have a slightly different outlook in politics, but he is a political animal.
He
and,
really is.
You know, yeah.
Oh, that is so interesting. Now, where are you from originally, David?
I was born in a little town called Paisley, which is outside of Glasgow.
Yes.
In the south of Scotland.
Now, Americans there may be some of you in the listening audience who recognize the name of John Witherspoon, who was the only clergyman to sign to be at the Continental Congress and to be a part of the process of the Declaration of Independence. He was a Presbyterian minister from Paisley, Scotland.
Wow, I did not know that.
And there's a big monument to him in the Paisley C of S congregation there. But that is interesting. You're from Paisley. Yeah. That is my father's mother's side of the family is from that area.
Wow.
We think
we could be related.
They were McDowells, MCDOW, but I'm almost certain they were McDowells. And somehow that L dropped off because whoever was signing the immigration papers didn't understand how a Scot would pronounce McDowell. We might have it might look on the page. That's interesting. So you were from Paisley. You went to Strathclyde, which is fairly close by in Glasgow.
We moved house. My mother was from the Scottish Islands, from the island of Skye. And when I was 13 in high school, I moved up to the island of Skye. So I went to what we call primary education in Paisley.
Okay.
And I went to high school in the Hebridean island of Skye. So it was from Skye, I then went down to Glasgow to
Where on Skye did you move to?
Well, no one will have heard of this, but it was a little village called Kensalire, and if you blink, you miss it.
Now, where on Skye is that?
It's in the north of Skye, between the main village in Skye is called Portree, and there's a ferry terminal at a place called Uig. And Kensalire is midway between Portree and Uig.
Okay, so on
and
that side.
The listeners really must get over to Skye.
They should get over to Skye. Yeah, I'm one of those sentimental guys. It's nice to be able to get over on a bridge at Kyle of Luck House, always like
you
getting
like
on the ferry.
Yeah.
And going
Did you visit Skye when you were over?
Oh, all the time. Skye was one of the my brother Mel took a beautiful photograph with just a regular camera of the Kerrang, which I love. I can stare at that picture for hours. It's a beautiful place, Skye, Eric Mackay, of the famous Mackay clan in Edinburgh, and I, the very first spring break when I was at the University of Edinburgh, took about a couple of weeks and just traveled around Scotland, went up north to Betty Hill, over to Cape Wrath, down the coast through Ullapool, out to Skye, stayed at an inn near Sligachan.
Sligachan Hotel.
Yeah.
This program is sponsored by the Isle of Skye Tourist Organization.
That's right. So love Skye. I want to talk more about that. But you grew up then on Skye. Did your secondary education, I guess we would call high school there.
It was in Portree High School.
And then you came to Strathclyde.
Yeah.
Now brothers and sisters? Did you
I have one brother, Ian. Ian is also a minister. He is an Episcopalian.
I didn't
so
know this.
We were both brought up Presbyterians. But he became an Episcopalian. He was, until recently, a Church of Scotland minister. I'm a Free Church of Scotland minister. But recently he became an Episcopalian.
And is he in the Scottish Episcopal Church?
He's in the Scottish Episcopalian Church. He's present pursuing PhD studies at Durham University, but he also works for a church in Dumfries in the Scottish borders.
Wow. That would be some interesting conversations,
We have great conversations.
And then from Strathclyde, did you go straight to the Free Church College?
I did, yes. I did my degree majoring in English and politics and then went straight to Free Church College.
Now, tell me about your parents. What did your parents do? What was your
My father was in administration in the nursing profession. He started off being a nurse and latterly became a manager administrator. My mother was just a mum. She just stayed at home. My mum was a Christian. She was a Presbyterian. And my father is an atheist. So it was a very interesting upbringing.
Wow. And did you go to church?
We went
up to
church, yes. My dad used to drive us to church every Sunday. And myself, my brother, my mum would go to church. And he would go home and he would pick us up. So we were brought up through church and through Sunday school.
Had he been reared in a believing home or in a Christian home?
He had not. No, he had been raised just in a nominal Presbyterian church.
Church of Scotland?
Church of Scotland, but really did not attend and is to this day.
But do you know what happened along the way with him to just drop that completely out of his life?
It's just that it was never in his life.
Right.
And, you know, in spite of having two sons as ministers, he just really has not committed. He's now 82 years of age, and the older he gets, the more he's reading scripture constantly now. And that is unusual. And that's hopeful. You know, he really has an appetite for reading scripture. So, you know, my hope and prayer is as he gets older that he's a seeker. Those who seek will find.
How did you become a Christian?
I became a Christian through various factors. Do you have the Gideons here in the U.S.?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, through a Gideon's Bible I got in school. Through my brother's testimony, he began to speak to me about Christian things. And also through a children's Sunday school teacher, Ivor Martin, who's now one of my colleagues in Stornoway in the island of Lewis. He was my Sunday school teacher, and he spoke one day about the judgment, and that really spoke to me. So all these things seemed to come together in one particular month, receiving the Gideon's Bible at school, the witness of my brother, and also the Sunday school teacher.
And your brother's how much older?
He's 8 years older.
8 years older. Yeah. Wow. So that really would have been significant, impact, you know, person to look up to.
And all his friends used to come to the house, and they used to talk about things, talk about theology, talk about scripture. And it was great.
Now, so you would have been how old when that happened? That would have been...
I would have been about 13, 14.
And has your Christian life been characterized by steady growth? Is there ups and downs along the way? Tell
us a
little about that.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. There is ups and downs, and I'm not conscious of all that much growth. But, I mean, ironically, and I'm just not saying that, the older I get, the more I see my weakness and sinfulness. Mm. But the corollary of that is the more I honestly see the grace of God. Mm. And yes, there are ups and downs, but assurance has never been an issue with me. I've always been confident in my faith, because there is a sense in which it's not my faith. You know, it was given to me as a gift that will never be taken away from me. So I've never had big shocks, never had great assurance problems. And I just see God's grace every day. It's wonderful.
Mm. So when did you feel a call to go into the ministry?
Well, it was about, well, we would call it second year at university. And I originally had lots of career options. I wanted to be a teacher, then I wanted to be an accountant. And I was attending a congregation in Glasgow which had a quality preaching ministry. The minister then was a guy called Donald MacLeod, who later became a systematic theology professor. Mm. And he was pastor of a church in Glasgow at that time, which was a large student church. And I remember him preaching from a verse in Timothy, "Stir up the gift that is within you." Mm. And really, that night, I just had this overwhelming, you know, sense of calling. I went to see him the next day. And he says, "Well, I think you're called as well." And he gave me a Greek grammar book. He says, "You start learning that." And that was it. He always said there's gospel and grammar, so I'm sure there is.
That's great. And so off to the Free Church College you went after Strathclyde.
Strathclyde, yeah. I graduated there in Bachelor of Arts and then went to Edinburgh.
And while you were in Edinburgh at the Free Church, where did you live?
I live down in an area of Edinburgh called Leith.
Near the Iona Street?
Iona Street is where I lived, yes. Yeah. Those of the listeners who may know Edinburgh, there's the old town, there's a little port called Leith. And Leith Walk is a street that connects the port up to the town. And I lived halfway up that in Iona Street.
Okay. Yeah. And were you married at that time?
First year, I was not married. I shared a flat with a guy called David Robertson, who is...
Very dubious character.
Well, absolutely. Again, is one of my colleagues. And as we say in the UK, we were like chalk and cheese, but we got on so well. Mm. And he's a guy that I've probably spoken to virtually every day for the last 25 years. And, you know, I think in the Christian life, it's great to have friendships like that.
Yeah,
especially with folks you maybe don't agree, and we spar off one another.
Yes.
And, you know, we fall out, we fall in, but we remain good friends.
Yes.
And I think we're good for one another. But I stayed there, and then I got married between my first and second year.
And you had met your wife?
I'd met my wife in school, in high school.
Okay.
Nina is her name.
She's from Portree.
Nina is from Portree in the Island of Skye, that's right. And she is a Christian girl. And, whoa, I mean, both of us have Christians in our families as far back as we can remember.
Mm.
You know, we see their God's covenant grace and just every single generation.
And was her family Free Church?
They were indeed,
they
yes.
Were.
Her father's an elder in the Free Church. Yeah.
Mm. And so 3 years of study in Edinburgh at the Free Church College, and then straight to Smithton Culloden.
Straight
from
to Smithton, yeah. We don't do any internships. We don't do any assistantships. I wanted to go to a country congregation. My plan, Ligon, was when I was in college, was to go to a congregation in an area called the Black Isle, a small congregation, 50, 60 people. And I wanted to do my PhD while I was there. I had it all planned out, rural congregation, PhD, and then maybe move off to something else, teaching or something else. But God intervened, and I left college, and I went to this new church planting work in suburban Inverness, a suburb of the largest city in the Highlands, and started with 15 people in a church extension charge. It was tremendous.
Now, help people know on a Scottish map, if you're looking at Scotland, and Edinburgh is down towards the southeast part of the country, and then you sort of draw a line up a little bit diagonally towards the north, you get further north, and as you say, the last large town
yeah.
in the north is Inverness.
That's right.
And Smithton Culloden is going to be to the east of that?
It really is essentially part of
Inverness. Or right in Inverness.
Absolutely.
Right.
It's like Madison and Jackson.
And these were two joined charges? Tell me the origin of the name Smithton Culloden.
It's a sort of conglomeration of different suburbs. Here's a real Scottish name, Balloch. Have you got that bit? Balloch is one of them. Culloden, Smithton, and West Hill. But we call it Smithton Culloden because it's in between the area called Smithton and the area called Culloden, which is, of course, famous for the last battle in British soil, 1746.
The last stand of Bonnie Prince Charlie.
That's right.
And the Butcher Cumberland.
That's another program in itself, Ligon.
And so you go there and you've got 15 folk.
15 people, yeah.
Now, what did the Free Church think was going to happen, sending this young lad?
This rookie up to the Highlands. I don't know what they thought could happen. Interestingly enough, a lot of folk in the church thought it will never, ever get off the ground. It will not succeed. And there was a minority who said, yes, it will succeed. Let's go for it. Let's put our money where our mouth is and let's fund it. Now, the way we operate is that our denomination would fund a new church plant.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have to fundraise. The salary was paid by central funds. They paid expenses. So it was a good deal. You know, it was secure in that sense. And it just grew and grew. Our mother church is an old church called the Free North, where I think some of the folk from the First Pres are doing a mission trip there next summer.
And I've been there with a number of folks from First Pres before.
It's a wonderful, seats 1,800. We were planted from that church, and we enjoy good relationships with it. Mm. But ever since then, it's just grown.
Now, how many free churches are there in Inverness? Are there two free churches?
We have three free churches.
That's what
there's
I thought.
Free
yeah.
North, and there's Greyfriars
yeah.
and there's Smithton Culloden. All of them have just a slightly different ethos.
Right.
But we get on very well. We complement one another extremely well.
The first Scottish wedding that I ever attended was in Inverness.
Yeah.
Is there a Church of Scotland church called Greyfriars?
East Church?
Yes.
The East Church on Academy Street.
Yes. Yeah, that's where
it was. A
great
church, a good evangelical church.
Yeah, Alan, and I've just blanked out, you'll know him. He was a evangelical Church of Scotland.
Alan McCulloch.
Yes. That's
He's now
exactly
an army chaplain.
Alan and Sheena.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alan went to be an army chaplain.
That's right. Yeah, his dad, I think, maybe had served in some capacity in the British Armed Forces.
That's possible,
He was always very interested in the military. So you arrive there in 1984. You have 15 folk, and now the Lord has gathered 350?
We have 350 in a Sunday morning split between two services. Yeah.
And so you have to meet twice.
We have to meet twice because the building is reasonably small. We're looking at a building project just now, but that's in the early stages.
Right. And what's the difference between pastoring a congregation of 15 or 20 folk and 350 folk?
Well, you know, arguably, the 15 group was great. It was a very tight group. We were very committed. It was the core. More people, more problems, more challenges. But there is a sense in which, at one level, you can't say it's easier pastoring a larger congregation. It's certainly, the positives are it's stimulating. Lots of different types of people, a broad age range, broad intellectual, spiritual ability. That's stimulating, always new faces. So that's good. But more people, more hassle. But that's the job.
Who are some of the people who have influenced you the most along the way?
Yeah, probably within my own denomination, obviously Donald MacLeod was my pastor as a student and later, subsequently, a professor of theology. Guy like Alec MacDonald, who is a minister in Edinburgh from my own denomination. Eric Alexander is. I don't know if any of our listeners have heard of him. He's really the grandfather of certainly Scottish Reformed Presbyterian evangelicalism.
Right.
and is well known here in the US.
That's right.
Eric has been a real encourager and a real mentor over the years. So these are guys who've really helped me. Books that I read, there are some authors that whatever they write, you buy everything that they write on. Supposing they write on, I don't know, how to maintain a golf course, you buy that book, you know. So, you know, I'll read anything by Don Carson, you mm-hmm. know, and mm-hmm. I'll read anything by Packer. I'll read anything by David Wells. I'll just buy the lot.
Right.
And I think it's good to have some authors like that. And that shows the Catholicity of the church. You know, I'm a Presbyterian. Don Carson's a Baptist. You know, you've got a guy like Mark Dever, Al Mohler
right.
here. You know, we have a different polity. But yeah, when the, you know, rubber hits the road, we're all on board. And,
right.
And there's some great
That's
guys
right.
just now to both listen to and to
yeah.
read.
In your own ministry, preaching is obviously a central part of
yeah.
what you do. What's your approach to preaching?
Okay, I love preaching. I preach, you know, a senior pastor in Scotland gets a rough deal. You know, we're preaching three times a week. I talk to some seniors in the States and they're only on once a
One,
week,
yeah.
you know. So we work for our living. Constant expository preaching, that's really what we're doing. And that is something a guy called, there was an old Scottish minister called Willie Still.
Mm.
And systematic expository preaching was unknown in Scotland until William Still came along. Mm. And reintroduced what, you know, Calvin and John Knox had been doing mm. years ago. Mm. And yet it was seen as novel. So that's what I do. It's, you know, systematic exposition.
And that means you're preaching through Bible books?
Through all the time, constantly.
What are you preaching on right now, David?
I am just finished 1 Peter, and we're doing Revelation in the evening.
Now, in 20 years, or 20 years plus now, what are you? How much of the Bible have you covered, reckon, in that
yeah,
course
of time?
Yeah, I would
say we're up to about 80%.
Wow.
I've not done Leviticus yet. I've not done Song of Solomon yet. I'm waiting for someone like you to teach me how to do Song of Solomon.
You can listen to Derek's tapes.
I think Derek done the song?
Done Song of Solomon, bless his heart.
Good, so, he's a brave
I've
man.
And I've done Leviticus, so you
Excellent.
Can learn from my mistakes, brother.
Yeah, yeah. So just, I mean, I would take...
Have you repeated any books in that course
yes,
of time?
Yes, I have repeated Ephesians and Philippians. I have done Philippians three times.
I bet. Yes.
I love Philippians.
Yes.
You know?
So you preach through Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday night Bible books.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Do you do other things? Do you ever do topical series
historical?
Fact,
I'm doing
or...
a topical just now. I'm doing Christ in the Old Testament.
Mm.
We did the Proto-Evangelium. That was the first one. You know, the seed of a woman will bruise the head of a serpent. And various, we'll do Isaiah 53. We do things like that. I did something in Woman of the Bible. I'll do various things like that. Wednesday evenings, I may do more practical type things. We're going through the Westminster Confession of Faith just now. I just realized there was some weaknesses in teaching among some of our people. So we're just doing that. Just 20-minute spot every Wednesday. And we would have a prayer meeting as well at the same time.
Do the folk that come to your church, when they come for the first time, do they find your approach to preaching different from what they've experienced elsewhere? What's their reaction?
Well, there's two groups of folk, Ligon, who come to our church. One, frankly, have not experienced preaching anywhere, so it is new. The other one type is that, you know, in Scotland, you'll very often have, even in an evangelical church, the Bible will not be read. And so there's no, you know, reference to the passage of Scripture. But folks seem to appreciate what we do. And the deeper we go, the better. Now, I don't think it's heavy going. You know, I do like to have a contemporary edge to it, a contemporary application. Mm. So that's the big approach, you know, asking what is God saying in the original passage? What was he saying to the original recipients or listeners? And then moving on to what is God saying to us today? How can we apply it? Mm. So it's a simple case of state what the passage says, explain what the passage means, and apply what the passage wants us to do. Mm. You know, in that level, it's very, very simple. Our sermons would typically be minimum 30 minutes.
Right.
Max 40, 45 minutes.
Right. And your service would last for about how long?
1:10, an hour, okay. 10 minutes, an hour, 15 minutes.
And that's by design, or it just sort of happens that way?
It just happens that way. Yeah. We're not as program-orientated as y'all are here, you know? Obviously, our 9:30 service, we have to stop it within the hour, because we have a lot of folk maybe working hospital, doing works of mercy, necessity, and Sunday have to go off to their work, and we've got to turn the church round for the next lot coming in.
And then on Wednesday, you gather in the same church hall?
We gather in a smaller hall for a prayer time.
Right. And you would have what sort of percentages of the congregation would attend the various meetings? You have pretty strong attendance on Sunday evenings?
Well, again, this is a cultural difference, Logan. We have on our communicants roll 210 members. Now, these 210 members would all be in church on Sunday. So, you know, we've got 350 people come.
Yes.
So all our members come to church.
Yeah.
And many folk that we would call adherents. Now, these would be people who come to the church but are not believers. They have not been converted or they have not made a commitment.
Yes.
So that's the sort of constituency that we would have. Now, I would say that 75% of our members would come to the prayer meeting. It's part of the deal. It's just part of the culture. It's a high level of commitment. If you're a member, you come to the prayer meeting. Because we've got a lot of families, obviously not everyone can make it on a Wednesday night. But that's a feature of our church.
And tell us about your own family. You have four
children. Yeah, I have Ian. He's 23. He's going to law school in Aberdeen in September. Stephen is 20. He studies biomedicine. And Alison is 13. She's at high school. And Peter is 8. And he's in primary school. So, you know, family planning was not our strength, I'm afraid.
You got them spread all over the map. Yeah. That's great. David, we were talking about preaching, and you said you take an approach to preach through Bible books. What would you reckon in Inverness, of the churches that are there, how many churches have preachers that are preaching through Bible books, probably?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think it's all that common.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Certainly a lot of the Presbyterian churches would. And a couple of the Baptist churches increasingly are into that. So, you know, it's not all that rare.
Hmm. And David, you not only preach three times a week, you pastor your congregation.
I try.
What's your staff like?
Yeah, well, it's actually for Scotland, we are an unusual church in that we do have a staff.
Yes.
Most churches, most of my colleagues do not have any staff. They run some significant congregations all on their own with no admin, nothing. In Smith and Culloden, I'm there as senior. We have a youth director who's called Jonathan Keenan from Oxford, Mississippi, a graduate of Ole Miss. But in spite
you claim Oxford, Mississippi is one of your favorite places.
It's one of my favorite places in
Earth. You've just endeared yourself to the hearts of many
here. I love Oxford.
In
fact, on Wednesday morning, I had breakfast at the Bottle Tree Bakery. every time in the U.S., I make a pilgrimage there and a dinner the night before in City Groceries. Mm. Great place. So we've got Jonathan as our youth director. We've got a lady, Ali McDonald. Ali does our women and children's ministry. Mm. She's director of women and children. And we have one administrator, one secretary who covers us all.
And that actually is a large staff for
any
British church.
It is, absolutely.
You don't see it very often. The pastor just has his study in the home.
Yeah.
There'll be a church hall nothing
There's
else.
No admin.
But that with no other administrative help.
We have a vacancy for an associate pastor. and we'd love to see that filled. Wow. But we just haven't.
And a 350 member church is also an unusual thing in Scotland.
In Scottish terms, that would be large. I think we may be the largest free church of Scotland on the Scottish mainland. Our big one is Stornoway. In its day, it had maybe about 2,000 folk attending. The next one is a country congregation in Lewes called Back Free Church, yes, where Ian D. Campbell is pastor. But on the mainland, we're probably similar size to
right.
Back, actually.
Right.
But on the mainland, we're quite big. Our listeners have to know that in Scotland, churches tend to be fairly small.
Yeah.
Most free churches would be about 50, 60 people attending. Mm. That would be the same in the Baptist churches as well, and in the Church of Scotland.
And I think that probably for most places in England, that would hold as well.
Absolutely,
if there was any
yeah.
higher attendance in the British Isles, it might be in Northern Ireland. Would you think
it
maybe
would
you
be,
would have a little bit higher
yeah,
church attendance?
Northern
in,
Ireland yeah. is a high tradition.
Yeah.
It's perhaps most like the South here,
yeah.
and there's still a residual church attendance.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit then about the culture that you're in and some of the challenges
yeah.
in reaching that culture. Because I went to Scotland. I have Scottish ancestry a long way back, and I dreamt of going to Scotland and study. I had a wonderful experience there. I loved every second that I spent in Scotland as a doctoral student at the University of Edinburgh. Loved the friends that I met, had a, you know, not only a historical love for Scotland, but a church historical interest in Scotland. So it's a very special place for me. But as a warden, which is sort of a glorified resident assistant in the university halls there at Edinburgh, the Scottish students that I met were by and large hardened to the gospel.
Yeah.
And there was a feel of sort of, you know, hey, we've been there and done that.
Yeah.
We've tried Christianity
yeah.
and it didn't work, and we've moved on to something
yeah.
else. Characterize the culture for me that you're trying to
get. I think you're on the money there philosophically. There's an illustration in the center of Edinburgh. There are two statues. One is of David Hume, the philosopher, and the other one is of John Knox. The statue of David Hume is outside the High Court. It's prominent. The statue of John Knox, the reformer, is hidden in a courtyard in the university.
Mm.
And to me, that's a metaphor for where Scotland is philosophically. John Knox is someone that we are now ashamed of. He represents a past, and we've moved on. Secular philosophy dominates. It's an incredible postmodern nation.
Mm.
We have a Scottish Parliament, which is one of the most liberal parliaments, I think, in the world. The legislation is consistently secular, consistently challenging Christian doctrine.
Mm.
And amongst the people, there is that sense of, who cares? You know, what is truth? It doesn't really matter. And so philosophically, that postmodern agenda is something we've got to engage in and interact. In terms of social issues, alcohol abuse is a big thing, drug abuse is major, divorce is flying through the roof, abortion is rampant, and so just many of the issues that you have here in the U.S.
When you see folks who come to your church, who are not coming as believers, they're coming as unbelievers, and they've been, for whatever reason, attracted to your church, and then God in His mercy brings
yeah.
them to faith in Christ. Given that kind of a setting, what are the things that the Lord is using to get to them, to get them into a church in the first place? You know,
there's a consistent pattern here. Many of the folk
who
come to our church were brought by friends or family.
Mm-hmm.
Would you let me tell me a difference? A recent story, Linda Sterling, was a girl that I met at a school function a few years ago. I sat beside her at what we call a daffodil tea. I don't know if the listeners know about daffodil teas, but that's what we had. And I just spoke to Linda. And now, I rarely do this, but I had a gospel tract in my pocket. And we just began talking, and I could see that she'd a need, and I just gave her this tract. 3 years later, that's 2 months ago, she turned up at a church just desperate. It's like the psalm, my soul is in a dry, parched land where there is no water.
Mm.
And she has just been drinking in scripture. We run a course in the UK which has been very successful called Christianity Explored.
Right.
And it comes out of All Souls Church, Langham Place. A guy called Rico Tice has pioneered that. And it's extremely biblical, very thorough, and it works well.
Now tell us how you use that, David.
Christianity Explored is a Bible study on the book of Mark, and there are 10 programs. What we have, we meet at 6:30 in the evening, and we have a meal together. We would run it, our current group has got about 36 people in it, so we would do it 36 folk at a time. And this is the third time we've done it. So at 6:30 we would meet, we would have dinner, and then we would
be on a weeknight.
On a weeknight, Tuesday evenings. And then we would have a Bible study on the book of Mark, and we would have a DVD video presentation where Rico Tice would explain certain elements of the Christian faith, and then we would have a question and answer session.
Mm.
And it would be over by 8 o'clock in the evening. Christianity Explored is the single most effective thing that we have ever used in 21 years.
How do you get folk to come to Christianity Explored meetings?
Again, it's word of mouth. Our last three courses have been from within the church and friends of people in the church. The next one that we're going to do is we're going to advertise in the newspapers and in the media. But it's just word of mouth, friendship. Now, folk talk about friendship evangelism, and I think that's important because it's both good and it's bad. Friendship evangelism is good when people take folk to where the gospel is, or they themselves explain the gospel. That's good friendship evangelism. There is a subtle change sometime in that a lot of folk seem to imply that being a friend is the evangelism. But you cannot be saved through friendship. You know, we must all be exposed to the gospel. We must hear the word. So it's a little concern I have about what's called friendship evangelism.
Yeah,
it's good, but what do you mean by it?
Yes. How often have you run the Christianity Explored courses?
We'll move it up to twice a year now. We will do it twice a year just now.
And what put you on to Rico's material in Christianity Explored?
What put us on was that there was a major scheme going in the UK called Alpha, the Alpha course. The Alpha course used that same format with a meal and discussion. But without being too judgmental, many of us were happy with the format, but we were unhappy with elements of the teaching and the theology of the Alpha course. So what All Souls Langham Place did was they recognized the value of, you know, the deal the way it's done, but they've put more biblical theology into it. So we'd been waiting for years to see, we just didn't do Alpha, because we really felt that it sold the gospel short. Is Alpha big here?
There is a pretty big association of churches using Alpha. We, like you, had the same reaction.
But Christianity Explored, you know, I know, is beginning to work in the U.S., you know, and it's
you mentioned last week on air Mark Dever at Capitol Hill Baptist Church, and he very much appreciates the content of Christianity Explored. In fact, if you go to the 9marks.org website, they have an evaluation of various evangelism programs, and the Christianity Explored is gets very high marks from them, and they use a version of it themselves for their outreach at the church. And so through word of mouth, folks come.
Can I say something just now? Sure. One of the things I've noticed, and I've been reflecting this in the last few weeks, is in the U.S. there are some phenomenal Bible teachers. I mean, I was telling Ligon last night at dinner that I try and listen to 3-4 sermons each week on the web. Great Bible teachers. What I would love to see both in the UK and in the US is biblical evangelists. I think there's a real shortage of that. I mean, we have guys like John Blanchard in the UK who's doing great business out there. And I would really like our listeners to pray for evangelists. I think the Billy Graham model has had its day, you know, big campaigns and stuff like that. But I think the church needs effective men who will really present the gospel.
Mm, I think that's so true. And in, say you've got 30-something folks coming to a Christianity Explored. Of those, how many are Christians and how many are folks that are
Of that crowd, 60% are not Christians.
Wow.
We split it into tables, and so obviously we need some Christians.
Is this hosted in your home,
no,
David,
it's in
or
the
somebody
church.
Else? It's at the church.
It's a bit too big for the home.
Yeah, that's a bunch of people to have.
And
all
again,
at once.
We have folk coming in to do the catering. We don't have a catering staff, so volunteer folk do that.
So, okay, you've described a little bit of Scottish culture and some of the challenges that are there for you, and you've mentioned the word postmodern on a couple of occasions. What are, in addition to that idea of, you know, what is truth and the relativism of the culture, what are some of the other things that you see that make people resistant to the Christian message?
I think there is just that rebellion against authority. There's this anti-authoritarianism. And just a sense that, you know, as Frank Sinatra, I did it my way. I think also the church has not helped itself in that it has presented a form of a gospel which, you know, like, and if you take the power out of the gospel, I wouldn't go and listen to it.
Right.
And the church itself has been unattractive, preaching without passion, preaching without power. And people respond to the real deal. Interesting thing, I mean, the other day I was reading a book. It was featured in the Oprah Winfrey Book Club by James Frey, a million different pieces.
Yes.
In many ways, it was a fascinating book. You know, it's full of blasphemy and expletives and stuff.
Mm.
But the interesting thing was it's a book about this guy's recovering from drug rehab. A friend of mine up in Washington, D.C. recommended it to me, and I read it, and it was really a page-turner. Halfway through my reading of it, there was this big debate that it was made up, you know, that it wasn't entirely, you know, accurate. And, you know, when I heard that, I lost interest in the book because it wasn't authentic.
Yes.
And you can do it exactly the same with the Bible.
Mm.
If a guy stands and says, well, you know, Moses didn't really write the first five books of the Bible, and you know, Paul didn't really write Ephesians, and Jesus didn't really perform the miracles, I'm not going to carry on with a faith that's half-baked.
Right.
You know? So I think the church has been the instrument of its own demise, and it has sold the faith short. And churches which are growing and which are vibrant are churches which take the Bible seriously. And they're preaching with an authority, not of man, but of God.
Do you have a fellowship there in Inverness with other evangelical ministers in different churches?
In my own area, in the area of Culloden, I fellowship with other ministers. My main friend would be the local Baptist minister in Culloden, Culloden Baptist Church. Jim and I would share the same theological outlook.
Wow.
And we go on well together.
Right.
I also meet with the Church of Scotland guy and with one of the charismatic
pastors. Is there a good group of relatively evangelical men in that area?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Inverness is almost Bible Belt. You know,
okay.
It's got a lot of evangelical churches there.
And what's the culture like in Inverness as opposed to Glasgow or Edinburgh?
Well, in Crete, it used to be distinctive. It used to be Highland in the same way in which, you know, Jackson, Mississippi would be very different to Hartford, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
But increasingly, these differences are evaporating.
Mm.
Sociologists talk about the Coca-Colaization of society in that one brand is universally recognized.
Mm-hmm.
So it is in Inverness and Glasgow that the culture is homogeneous or homogenous, as you guys would say. And even I come over here now, and there is not a lot of difference.
That's true.
More often I come over, the more often I say yes, just the same as back home.
Yeah, once you've seen one mall, it doesn't matter whether you're in New York, Chicago, St. Louis.
Yeah. There's only one way of doing the Golden Arches, you know.
That's right. Now, you travel and preach a lot.
I do, yes.
You've been to...
I've been to
Mexico,
Korea, Canada, the U.S., and really most of my stuff is within the United Kingdom,
Scotland, England, Wales. What are those connections? Canada, U.S., Korea. Tell me about those.
Well, just,
Preaching the Free Church congregations in Canada?
Just in Canada, yeah. We have congregations there. A lot of Scots folk emigrated to Canada. We have one congregation in the United States.
In Detroit
Michigan.
Yeah.
But the other ones have been, the Presbyterian Church in Korea was fascinating. Have you been in Korea, Luke?
I've not, I need
it
to.
It is a fascinating place where the church is vibrant and Presbyterianism is very, very strong. In England and Wales, it's again mostly congregational churches or Baptist churches that I
preach
in.
And how often do you preach away from your own congregation?
I have to say that my main passion, my main love is my own church.
Yes.
There is no pulpit that I enjoy more. And
yes.
there is nothing to be interacting with your own people.
Right.
And I'm usually preaching away about 6 to 8 weekends a year. Mm. Now, that would be max. I would not do more than 8.
Right.
Because I love my own local church. Mm. That's my bread and butter. And I don't economically. I mean that's what I'm called to in the first instance.
Yeah.
And I think churches which do grow are churches where the pastor has made a decision. Yeah, I'm going to work there. However, I do think it is good for the pastor and the people to get out in the road a little bit more and do some.
David, you've been in the United States enough where you have picked up patterns of congregational life and attitudes that exist out in evangelical culture here. What are some of the unique characteristics of your own congregational life that would be different from things that you see here, and maybe some things that we could learn?
Well, I don't know. I would not be presumptuous to say that. Ironically enough, I mean, having spoken about Christianity Explored, we would not be as program-orientated as y'all would be. I think a part of that is good, and there is a certain emphasis in, look, God alone can do it. That's not a sort of laissez-faire, you know, let's let go and let God attitude, which is wrong. But you cannot organize the kingdom. You know, you look at the metaphors for the kingdom. The big one is a garden. Paul may plant, Apollos may water, but God alone gives the increase. That's significant. Another one is our lack of professional workers in the churches is good, using volunteers.
Mm.
You know, we will not wait for the janitor to tidy away the chairs. People will do it.
Mm-hmm.
When you have meals, you don't leave it to the catering staff. The women of the church will do it.
Right.
And so that's good. I mean, in the U.S., you know, everybody's got a job and everyone who's got a job's got an office. And,
right.
You know, so, you know, we perhaps don't do that so much. The Lord's Day is something which is unique in Scotland.
Yeah.
We would have a different view of the Lord's Day than maybe folk have here.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to go down a legalistic keeping of the Lord's Day, but I would certainly say as a baseline, we would not shop on a Sunday. We would not do work that was not of necessity and mercy. We would not go to professional or amateur sports games, which is very different. Now, I think that I want our listeners to know that I think that liberates us, that frees us up. You know, our kids do not need to study on Sunday. We enjoy God, we enjoy one another. Sunday is a feast day. You know, many of us would meet in one another's homes, and lots of families would meet together and have meals together. Church twice on a Sunday is big. Folk would go. We've got a large evening service. So, you know, these are differences. Someone told me, and in fact I read it on the internet, that only 20% of the US population hold passports. Now, that could lead to a certain parochialism. Whereas I think it is good to, I mean, to have an international perspective.
Right.
And that's something that perhaps
you
all could learn.
Yeah.
You know, there is
for sure
life beyond Canada.
Well, I certainly know that, and I don't know whether it's just because of the history of Britain and the empire especially.
Yeah.
Where the very realities of the empire in the 19th century forced educated British society to think a lot about the world.
Yeah.
And even vocationally, you know, they were, you know, with people that were involved in mercantile professions and things
it's
like this.
A seafaring nation as well.
It was a nation that was a crossroads for the world. And I remember being very struck by that. When I first got to Britain, I sort of landed in London first, and at what the Free Church congregation then was called Cole Abbey.
Yeah.
Now it's the London
City
Presbyterian.
Yeah,
City Presbyterian. But Ian Mackay was a ruling elder in that. Ian MacLeod was a ruling elder in that. Congregation, and John Nichols was the pastor, and Ian was working in the Foreign Office.
Yeah.
And I stayed up two or three nights just agog at all this guy knew about the world.
Yeah.
And I'd always been interested in world affairs as well, but I was struck by how often I found that to be the case in Free Church homes, you know, where we were sitting around having a cup of tea and there was an awareness of what was going on out there. In a way, we were talking the other day about how it's interesting, even American news media is very America focused, and that, you know, you get these little snippets about something happened here, something happened there, whereas if you turn on the BBC World Service, you know, it's, you know, 1 second you're in Delhi, the next second you're in Sydney, the next second you're in, you know, Budapest, the next, you know, it's all over the place.
And
there's an awareness of the world.
As Christians, it's important for us to be world Christians,
that's
to
so
have
true.
That great awareness of
so
a world
true.
Beyond.
We've been talking today with David Meredith. He is the pastor of the Smithton Culloden Free Church of Scotland in Inverness, Scotland. He's been the pastor there for over 20 years. He's been in Jackson to preach the missions conference at First Presbyterian Church. You can get the tapes of those conferences if you would like to listen to David preach. You can get the tapes or CDs of those conferences, or you can go to our website at www.fpcjackson.org, and you can actually listen online to all of his messages, or you can download an MP3 onto your computer and take it wherever you want and listen to it. I'd encourage you to take advantage of that. If you'd like a tape or a CD, you can call the church office at 601-353-8316 and ask for the Church Media Resource Center and ask for Mr. McCullough. And he can get you set up with preaching, with the messages that Mr. Meredith brought to us during the missions conference. And I'd encourage you to do that. I'd also encourage you to go to David's own church website, which is www.smithtonchurch.com. That's S-M-I-T-H, Smith, just the regular way. Ton, T-O-N-C-U-R-C-H.
C-H-U-R-C-H.
It's hard getting all of that out in once. And check out, because, David, your messages are on video and audio
each week. We keep 1 week's supply of video and several weeks' supply of audio.
So take advantage of that. David, thank you for being here with
thank
us again today.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
It's been a blessing. People have really responded with great appreciation to your preaching, your ministry.
Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you, Bill Wyman. Thank you, folks, for listening to us. Have a good Lord's Day.